They can be found almost all over the island, from mountains, valleys to the coast. Natuna Island is now included in the Natuna District, Riau Islands Province. Natuna Island and the surrounding small islands have been designated as Natuna Geopark, as a large area for the conservation.
From Jakarta, Indonesia, here is Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen to our program through shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Online streaming, voanews.id, and at RI Digital Mobile Application. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
From
Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. Welcome to the English service of Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republik Indonesia. This is Rahma on the mic, who will be presenting you various updates, information, programs, music. Everything's taking you closer to Indonesia. From the news, we'll be continuing with quotes of the day. And also we have interesting programs such as Indonesian Wonder, Let's Speak Indonesian, and Music Corner. So stay tuned on voanews.id, RRI Digital Mobile App, and also shortwave frequency 3325 and 4755 kHz. But first, as always, let's begin with the news.
Hello and welcome to the news on Voice of Indonesia. These are the headlines. Indonesia launched National Culture Day, spotlighted local food. Fadlizon calls culture a nation's unifying force. I'm Ofra and this is the news in details. Indonesia is commemorating its National Culture Day for the first time. Established by the government on October 17, 2025, Minister of Culture Fadlizon officially launched the inaugural ceremony at Frederick Fort, Yogyakarta City on Thursday night. In his address, Fadlizon emphasized the importance of local food as a cultural expression and a form of national self-reliance. More detail from Anissa Audita.
The Indonesian government is commemorating Culture Day for the first time, set on October 17, 2025. In a commemorative speech delivered in Yogyakarta on Thursday, October 16, 2025, Minister of Culture Fadlizon highlighted the role of local food as an important part of Indonesian culture expression. Furthermore, he stated that Indonesian local food also represents a form of national self-reliance and therefore requires special attention.
With so many incredible art subsectors, including traditional games, local food, and much more that are cultural expressions, we hope all of that becomes an important part.
Furthermore, Fadlizon also highlighted the importance of empowering local food as part of efforts to achieve national food self-sufficiency. He argued that strengthening local food aligns with President Prabowo Subianto's priority of encouraging food self-reliance through diversification of carbohydrate and protein sources from various domestic commodities.
We also want to support this local food because it is a crucial part of supporting the president's priorities, especially for food self-sufficiency. Food diversification can only be achieved if these local food sources are empowered and their ecosystems revive. We have sago, we have sorghum, we have corn, and also various sources of carbohydrates and protein.
Kita punya sagu, kita punya sorghum, kita punya jagung, dan juga berbagai sumber-sumber karbohidrat maupun
The Indonesian government set October 17 as National Culture Day. This date refers to the designation of the national emblem Garuda Pancasila and the motto Bhinneka Tunggal Ika on October 17, 1951. Fadlizon hopes that the National Culture Day commemoration will mark the beginning of a collective movement to preserve Indonesian culture, including safeguarding the local food that indigenous communities have maintained as part of the nation's identity and sovereignty. Anissa Audrita, Voice of Indonesia.
Culture Minister Fadlizon has affirmed that culture is a force that unifies and binds the nations. This statement was delivered during the commemorations of Indonesian Culture Day, marked by the opening of the Archipelago Cultural Heritage Exhibitions in Yogyakarta on Friday. Nur Kamila has the details.
The Ministry of Culture has officially commemorated Indonesia Culture Day, which falls every October 17. In his address at the opening of the Archipelago Cultural Heritage Exhibition in Yogyakarta on Friday, Minister of Culture Fadlizon stated that this commemoration was an initiative of Yogyakarta artist and cultural figure. Minister Fadlizon emphasized that cultural celebration should not be confined to a single day, but should be observed every day given Indonesia extraordinary cultural wealth and diversity.
Because our culture can be a unifying force, a binding force, a power that truly becomes binding powers.
Fadlizon also expressed his hope that next year Cultural Day commemoration could be held in Russia in other cities across Indonesia. Furthermore, the ministry plans to increase the number of cultural heritage centers from the current 22 to 23 for next year commemoration to strengthen the cultural diversity in the region.
These exhibitions of cultural diversity chronicles is of course only a small part of the time, not just the tip of the iceberg, but perhaps just the very tips of the immense wealth, diversity, and richness of our culture. This is merely one showcase of how our cultural wealth is so vast, its expressions is almost impossible to quantify. From the expressions of Chris Deggers, masks, wayang puppets, to various other decorative and ethnographic objects, there are so many. I believe they are inexhaustible.
Saking banyaknya, karena dari ekspresi keris, topeng, wayang, ya, kemudian juga benda-benda ragam hias, ragam etnografi lain yang begitu banyak, saya kira itu tidak akan habis-habisnya.
The Archipelago Cultural Heritage Exhibition in Oslo and live named the Archipelago Crab Heritage Oslo. The government hopes this event can become a collaborative platform for the government, communities, and cultural practitioners. Nur Kamila, Voice of Indonesia.
The Ministry of Investment and Downstream, also known as the Investment Coordinating Board, reports a positive trend in foreign investment entering Indonesia during the third quarter of this year. From July to September 2025, investment inflow reached over $29 billion, equivalent to approximately 491 trillion rupiah. Desi Anugranov has the details.
The Ministry of Investment and Downstream recorded total investment of $29.6 billion, or 491.4 trillion rupiah, entering Indonesia during the third quarter of 2025, while creating employment for more than 650,000 workers. In a press statement delivered in Jakarta on Friday, October 17, 2025, Minister of Investment and Downstream Rosan Ruslani stated this represents a 13.9% growth compared to the same period last year, achieving 25.8% of the 2025 national target of 1,905.6 trillion rupiah.
Pada triwulan ketiga ini, pencapaian investasi kami ini adalah 491.
In the third quarter, our investment realization reached 491.4 trillion rupiah, representing a 13.9% year-on-year increase from 431.5 trillion rupiah in the previous year. This achievement amounts to approximately 25.8% of the 1,905.6 trillion rupiah investment target we aim to reach by the end of December 2025, while the overall target remains 1,905.6 trillion rupiah. What matters most to us is employment generation. Based on our verification, these investments have created jobs for 696,478 Indonesians during this third quarter of
2025.
Despite ongoing global challenges, Rosan Ruslani expressed optimism about Indonesia's continued economic improvement. To support this growth, the government plans to expand foreign investment opportunities by directing more projects to regions outside Java.
We recognize the persistent geopolitical and economic challenges, but looking at future trends, we are encouraged by upward revisions from the World Bank and OECD. We expect this growth momentum to continue, with the ultimate goal of ensuring investments are distributed across Indonesia, rather than being concentrated solely in Java.
Rosan Ruslani emphasized that the Indonesian government will continue strengthening coordinating among stakeholders to ensure national strategic projects remain on schedule. This effort, he noted, is crucial for achieving the national investment target by the end of 2025. Desian Grand Office of Indonesia.
The head of Australia's military, Admiral David Johnstone, concluded a high-level visit to Jakarta. He emphasized the vital importance of Indonesia's sovereignty to Australian security and highlighted a significant expansion in joint defense exercises. Rama Sipki Pratama has the details.
I'm here in Indonesia, not for the first time, but always wonderful to be back here.
Chief of the Australian Defence Force, ADF, Admiral David Johnston, stated at a press conference in Jakarta on Friday, October 17th, that he had met with the commander of the Indonesian National Armed Forces, or TNI, General Agus Subianto. Admiral Johnston confirmed the ongoing cooperation between the two militaries and reiterated that Indonesia's sovereignty is vital to Australia's national interests.
As a near neighbour, Australia recognises the importance of Indonesia's stability, security and sovereignty as being essential also to Australia's security interests. The partnership between the Australian Defence Force and the Indonesian Armed Forces continues to grow and deepen.
Admiral Johnston highlighted the role of the Defence Cooperation Agreement, a pact signed in 2024, which he said has facilitated closer collaboration in various areas, from maritime security to military training. He noted that the two countries have conducted 20 joint exercises since the agreement was signed, including last year's Exercise Keris Wumara, which involved over 2,000 personnel from both nations. On the same occasion, Admiral Johnston expressed his appreciation for a meeting with Indonesia's Minister of Defense, Syafri Syamsuddin, to discuss bilateral defense ties, including plans for future joint exercises in Morotai, North Maluku.
Finally, I have just come from meeting with Minister Syafri, where I had the pleasure of updating him on the work that Panglima and I have been doing since our ministers met to advance maritime security, our training efforts together, work that we will do with TNI and Morotai, to a wonderful opportunity for me to speak directly to your minister, and I very much welcome the opportunity.
Admiral Johnston has been in Indonesia since Thursday, October 16th, for the annual High-Level Committee Australia-Indonesia meeting, a forum between the two militaries. Since establishing diplomatic relations in 1949, Indonesia and Australia have developed various cooperation programs, including in defense. Earlier in June, Minister Syafri and his Australian counterpart, Richard Marles, agreed to conduct joint military exercises on Morotai, an island in North Maluku known as the site of a major battle in the Pacific Theater of the Second World War. Rama Sitki Pratama, Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesia reaffirmed its commitment to be at the forefront and be part of the international peace missions in Palestine. This statement was delivered by the Indonesian Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, Armanata Kristiawan Nasir, at the ministerial meeting of the Non-Aligned Movement.
or NAM, Committee on Palestine in Kampala, Uganda on Wednesday. In official statement received in Jakarta on Friday, Armanata stated that Indonesia also urged the full implementation of the comprehensive plan to end the Gaza conflict, which was announced in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt on October 13, 2025, as a step towards a two-state solution. Furthermore, Armanata emphasized Indonesia's tangible commitment to Palestinian people through scholarship programs, training capacity building, and cooperations with the World Food Program, or WFP, to distribute food aid to the residents of Gaza. Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Science and Technology Stella Christie on Friday stated that Garuda School was intended to find nation's best scientific talents linked to legendary scientists like Albert Einstein and Marie Curie Catherine from Aceh to Papua. In her interview with RRI Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, Stella stated that the government's duty to create opportunities for Indonesian great talents who do not always have access to the best educations due to family background or economic situations. According to her, the Garuda School is especially designed as a boarding school aims to provide access to the best education for the most talented students, regardless of their economic background or region of origin. She added that the Garuda Schools, which combines the national curriculum with global standards, is expected to be a vessel to uncover the hidden instinct and provide them with the access and opportunity to contribute to Indonesia's future scientific, technological progress and innovations. Let's listen to the interview for the details.
Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world. Welcome to Voice of Indonesia's podcast. Today, we're diving into a remarkable initiative that's redefining Indonesia's education landscape, which is Sekolah Garuda, or the Garuda School Program. It is an initiative to develop Indonesia's science and technology, preparing the nation's young generation to become world-class leaders and to share the vision, the progress, and the impact of this program. Today, we are very honored to be joined by the Indonesian Vice Minister of Higher Education, Science, and Technology, Professor Stella Christie, PhD. Hello, Professor Stella. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very glad to be here.
Yes, it's a very pleasure to have you here. So, talking about the Garuda School, what could you explain to our listeners and viewers worldwide?
The Garuda School is a long time, has been a long time vision of our president, mm-hmm. President Prabowo, who today is celebrating his 74th birthday. This is one of the vision and also the dream that if you look at President Prabowo's writing back even to 2012, he has actually put forward this idea for a long time. Why? So before we go into the details of the program, I think it's very important for all of us to understand why. President Prabowo sees that the facts of what presented to us is that everywhere in the world, a country can only be prosperous and achieve high economic growth if it's actually very strong in science and technology. And you know, Barama, it's very interesting. We are also celebrating Nobel Prize winners. There are three Nobel Prize winners in economics. One of them is Professor Joel Mokyr, who is the professor at Northwestern University. I got my PhD at Northwestern. And why am I mentioning him? Professor Joel Mokyr's actual work is actually about the his research tells us that economic growth is first and foremost must be achieved through technological innovation. Mm-hmm. President Prabowo understood this very well, and he has the vision of really increasing and optimizing the science and technology of Indonesia. And how to do that? He also has a strategy, and the strategy is to, of course, to nurture the human capital that actually can contribute to the science and technological progress of and science and technology innovation in Indonesia. And his strategy, aside from right now, we're standing or sitting at the Ministry of Higher Education, Science and Technology, which is, of course, before it was not a separate ministry, but President Prabowo's commitment to science and technology is very high. That's why he put this ministry, a ministry of its own, of higher education, science and technology. Aside from that, he also sees that if we want to achieve things within a relatively short amount of time, it's also very important to nurture the very best of Indonesia, the creme de la creme of Indonesia, in a high school that is specialized for these people. So that's where the Garuda High School come from. And it has a very, very important characteristic. The first characteristic is that President Prabowo sees that there are Einsteins and Marie Curies everywhere in Indonesia, all the way from Aceh to Papua. However, the opportunities for those Einsteins wannabes and Marie Curies wannabes are not there right now. So it is the duty of the government to actually create that opportunities. And this is where Scholar Garuda is taking a role. It's to really answer that issue, that problem, that we have amazing talents in Indonesia, but those amazing talents do not always have the opportunity to get the best education. So in order to give in order to actually really give access to the best education to everyone who is most talented from Indonesia, President Prabowo created the Garuda High School.
Okay, so this is the Indonesian government task to not let the hidden Einsteins.
Of course, it's to actually uncover the hidden Einsteins and give them the opportunities, give them the access. Whereas right now, I think we might have all those like people everywhere, but they might, because of the family that they are born in, the situation that they are in, they don't always have the access to actually get the best educations. If we actually look at the educations in Indonesia right now, and the data really shows us, there are great schools, but most of those great schools are actually for those who come from privileged economic background, and not for everyone. And President Prabowo wants to give those creme de la creme of Indonesia, regardless of their economic background, regardless of where they live in Indonesia, the opportunities to get the best education.
All right, now it's time for paving the way for them then. So let's start from the foundation first. Garuda School is designed as a model boarding high school with a national curriculum combined with global standards. So what will make Garuda School different from regular schools in terms of teaching methods, facilities, or others?
We're not talking about facilities. Mm-hmm. That's not what make a school would be. We're talking about what is the characteristics of the school. Okay. And we're talking about what is this school is actually addressing. The first thing that we are addressing is that problem, that in Indonesia, we do not have equal opportunities. We do not have equal access for the best educations. And Sekolah Garuda, first and foremost, is addressing that. In addressing this, Sekolah Garuda really stands out from any other top schools that are in Indonesia, for any other quality, high-quality schools at Indonesia, because it's giving access. So to do this, Sekolah Garuda is actually going to give scholarships for at least 80% of the students. So those students who are actually have very, very good academic achievements, but they come from family who cannot afford. They come mm-hmm. from families who cannot afford to go to the best schools. Now they will be able to do that in Sekolah Garuda. Secondly, Sekolah Garuda is really put off. The second pillar of Sekolah Garuda is that we are actually really creating the new leaders of Indonesia. And what kind of new leaders that we want? Clearly, we want the new leaders who are able to compete internationally, to compete in the world, who are at ease speaking in international capacity, just like our president right now. At the same time, we need to have leaders who are very attuned to the diversity of Indonesia, are able to have empathy about the Indonesian, what makes Indonesia today, of the difficulties and all the challenges of Indonesia, as well as of the successes and being of Indonesia. And in order to do that, we are creating a third pillar of the Garuda High School, mm-hmm. is that not only the school has to be excel academically, but the students will be required to really give back to the communities around them. So Garuda High School is very special. It's not an exclusive high school. It's a high school that is very inclusive, and yet it's a high school that's also very special. I want to give maybe a metaphor to make it very easy to understand for the viewers. The metaphor comes from sports. Okay, if we ask, you know, Lionel Messi, mm-hmm. he comes from a very, very average family. In fact, like, I think his family are actually not affluent at all, right? And have difficulties of actually being able. But he did have the opportunities to play football, just like outside, right? However, there is a very important question. If Messi didn't get the special opportunities to be trained in the best football clubs, right, would he become Lionel Messi? And I think the answer is no. And so this is what Sekolah Garuda is. Yes, everyone should get the opportunity to get educations. And for this, President Prabowo already created that. That's Sekolah Rakyat. For those who come from the extreme poverty and those who couldn't go to school beforehand, it's currently being built many Sekolah Rakyat, or school for the people. And this accommodates a huge number of Indonesians who before may not be able to go to school and now able to go to school. But we also need very special school so that potential Einsteins, or the analog is like Lionel Messi's, will have the best clubs that train them. And that's Sekolah Garuda. So that's what makes Sekolah Garuda very special.
And how will it work? Like, based on the data here, there will be two schemes, like New Garuda Schools and Garuda Transformation mm-hmm. School.
Yeah. There are two schemes. Why? Because a great vision, that is the vision of President Prabowo, also needs a very, very sharp analysis mm-hmm. and impactful strategy. So the strategy is this. We have to create those opportunities, create those access, and when we look at the data, so first we actually do research. President Prabowo has asked me to think about Sekolah Garuda concept since 2024. Mm-hmm. And so we've been doing the research. What do we mean by research? We're collecting data. What really is the landscape and what really is the need in Indonesia? And what we found is that, first, there are actually already good schools in Indonesia. And those good schools, however, can be optimized. And what do we mean by optimized? We're talking about the numbers of graduates from those very good high schools that are accepted in top universities. Indonesia is still very, very low in contributing to undergraduates in top universities across around the world. You know, just to give an example, when I was an undergraduate, I got a scholarship to go to Harvard University. And I did my education in Indonesia. And I didn't even learn English until I was 12. But you know, all throughout that Harvard for 4 years, I was the only student from Indonesia for 4 years.
The only
undergraduate students. In graduate schools at Harvard, there are Indonesians, but undergraduates, very, very few. At my time at Harvard, there's one. We can check it right now. I don't know the numbers, but I'm guessing not more than 10. Maybe not even more than 5. It's so difficult to get in to undergraduates. So when we look at this, there are good schools that we can optimize so our really good students can get in to the best schools. And this is why we have one of the schemes to optimize an already existing good high schools. Okay. And this is called the Transformative High School. Transformative Garuda High School. So the other one, we also see that the data shows us that there are many areas in Indonesia where there are not even such schools, because most of those schools are actually perhaps like in Java or in Sumatra, already existing good high schools. But in many areas of Indonesia, those are not available. And exactly for those, we need to build anew, and this is what's called the the new Garuda schools. So very interesting for the viewers, actually, for the new Garuda schools, there will be only 20 of them. Until 2029 that we will build. There will be not more than 20. We're going to build them from anew. Everything is going to be everything is going to be built from anew. New students, new teachers, and it's going to be boarding schools. But very special, they are actually going to be built outside Java, all of them. Yeah, there's not going to be new school. We are very serious about giving access. And so if anybody has any thinking that this is elite, it's not even built in Java. This is actually built. This is actually going to be built in East Belitung. This is going to be built in Nusa Tenggara Timur. This is going to be built. This is going to be built in Papua. So this really is to give access. Yeah.
For equal distribution.
Yes. So that everyone from Indonesia, our creme de la creme, the best students from Indonesia's any region will actually have the ability to go to these Garuda schools.
And about the transformative schools, I mean the ministry or the government carries out the selection process or the school make a proposal?
Yes, both. That means okay. We actually open it for both schemes, for new Garuda schools and for the transformative Garuda schools. We actually make it into an open competition. So for the new Garuda schools, it's actually an open competition that we open to that we work together with the Ministry of Internal Affairs and let know all the provinces, the people at the provinces, that they actually can submit data like human index, the human capital index in their regions, the school report in their region, what is the level of poverty, level of employment, and very importantly, whether they actually have land that they are willing to actually contribute, you know, for the Scuola Garuda. So these are submitted to us, and we have a very clear rubric about how to select this, and a very open and transparent process. And the principle is just one. The area that needs the most will get the opportunity to be where the new Scuola Garuda is built. And for the transformative Garuda school, the Garuda high schools, these we also do the same thing. We open it to all the schools, the existing high schools, to submit to us their current data. And from there the principle is existing high school that are already very good but still can be optimized. It is an open competition.
Okay, Professor Stella, thank you so much for sharing your insights about Sekolah Garuda.
Thank you so much,
Garuda School. We look forward to seeing how the Garuda schools will continue to nurture future leaders for Indonesia and, of course, the world.
Yes. Please do check out all the Garuda information, and we're very, very happy to share this with the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, dear listeners and viewers, that's today's special podcast on Voice of Indonesia on the Garuda School, where Indonesian future leaders are ready to conquer the world, yet are still grounded in Indonesian values. So I'm Rahma signing out. Thank you for watching.
Listener, it concludes today's news bulletin from the Voice of Indonesia, bringing you the latest updates from Indonesia to the world. Fantasy,
quote of the day. Patience has no limits. If there is a limit, it means you have no patience. That's a quote by Kiai Haji Abdurrahman Wahid, or familiarly known as Gus Dur, an Indonesian Muslim figure from the Nahdlatul Ulama. He served as the fourth president of the Republic of Indonesia from 1999 to 2001. And that's quote of the day.
Hunted at hot afternoon or before breaking the fast. It is made of coconut milk, shaved ice, and liquid sugar. There are also slices of avocado, young coconut, and frozen mung bean juice called hunkwe. The taste is truly very fresh and sweet. What is the name of this food? As Doyabot from Bandung, West Java, it is said that this dessert has been there even before Indonesia's independence.
Voice of Indonesia. Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republik Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz and via streaming on voynews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. Voice of Indonesia.
Thank you for still joining us in the English program from Voice of Indonesia. Coming up next, a program that will take you closer to Indonesian art, culture, custom, food, tourist destinations, all on Indonesian Wonder.
RRI Digital with New Look. Various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as likes, comments and shares, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRI Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRI Digital.
Listener, every region in Indonesia has unique culinary. It is usually present at sahur or while breaking the fasting. Therefore, for this edition of Indonesian Wonder, we provide information about some of the most popular menus in various regions during the holy month of Ramadan. One of them, which is very famous, is Kanji Rumbi Porridge from Nangro, Aceh Darussalam province. Most in the province usually distribute Kanji Rumbi Porridge to people. This brownish porridge has a strong aroma and taste of spices. This is because the recipe is influenced by Indian cuisine. Not only to make your stomach full, but the porridge with its spices also makes your body feel warmer. Listener, the people of Pontianak, West Kalimantan, have a typical culinary of Ramadan, namely sotong pangkong. This dish uses squid as the main ingredient. The squid is not fried but grilled. However, before the squid has first been dried in the sun until dry. Before serving, the grilled squid meat must be pounded with a hammer in order to make the meat softer and easier to chew. Pangkong sotong is generally eaten with peanut sauce or prepared with sweet and spicy spices. Listener, another typical culinary of Ramadan is Asidah cake from Maluku. This cake actually comes from Arabia. The people of Maluku began to recognize this dodol-like cake when Islam began to enter Eastern Indonesia. Throughout the month of Ramadan, Asidah cakes are often used as takjil because they taste quite sweet. This cake will be very easy to find in Tajil markets and on the side of road throughout the holy month of Ramadan. Well, listener, that was Indonesian Wonder read by Ahmad Faisal.
Voice of Indonesia. Indonesian children must manage their time to read a lot of books, articles, or information. Reading must also be a daily habit for people of Indonesia. Chandrika Keo Murationgo, as a young writer, has her own response on this.
Yeah, definitely. I think I have lots of messages for the government, but specifically in literacy, Indonesia is actually the 60th country in Asia that has the lowest literacy rate, and this 60th position is due to a lot of factors. And I think a huge factor is in schools, you're not really taught to read, you're taught to listen and just do what you're told. So I think when we incorporate more reading habits or dedicating a specific time for children to read, giving them more reading materials, teaching them as if it could be an escape, not just a chore, I think that could really set a good precedent for their habits in the future.
Thank you for still joining us, the English service of Voice of Indonesia that you can enjoy on voinews.id at RA Digital Mobile App Channel VOI and shortwave frequency 3325 and 4755 kHz. Listener, next we present a program that allows you to learn Indonesian language. It's only on Let's Speak Indonesia.
Let's Speak Indonesia.
Introduce yourself.
Hello, nama saya Rahma.
Hello, my name is Rahma.
Hi, saya Ray. Hi, I'm Ray.
Now it's your turn. Let's answer this question.
Siapa nama kamu? Siapa nama kamu? What's your name? Answer by saying nama saya.
Insight of the day.
When greeting or introducing yourself, it is a good habit in Indonesia to shake hands and give slight nod. Well, listener, that's Let's Speak Indonesian for today. Stay tuned for learning more Indonesian words only on Let's Speak Indonesia. Sampai jumpa!
Voice of Indonesia. Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, today's music quarter presents a song by Jemimah Cita. Juanita Jemimah Cita, better known as Jemimah Cita, was born in Jakarta, September 14, 1999, and became known after participating in a talent search event on a national private TV station in 2021. After that, she started her professional career as a singer with song titled Separu in December 2021. On November 22, 2024, she returned to greet her fans with a new meaningful song full entitled Kamu Tak Sendiri, or You're Not Alone. This song tells about emotional support and empathy for people who are facing difficulties. Everyone will definitely face difficulties and problems. However, how someone deals with them is something that must be done in order to be able to rise and become better in the future with the support of others who make you feel not alone in facing it. Listeners, here is Jemimah Cita with Kamu Tak Sendiri.
Sendiri berlari.
Indonesia.
Dear listener, that's a wrap today's program of English service from Voice of Indonesia. If you have any feedback to send, you can send it to our email, voilisteners@gmail.com, or send a direct message, mention us on social media, Facebook fan page, The Voice of Indonesia, or Instagram at voi_official. Follow us as well on TikTok at voi_official and subscribe to our YouTube channel, VOI Official. And you can also reach us on WhatsApp, +62 821 2381 2130, +62 821 2381 2130. So I'm Rahma signing out. Bye for now.